Well, good evening and welcome back to the Journey Home program. I'm your host, John Mark Grodi, here at EWTN. And we have this great privilege once again to come together with a cup of coffee to hear a story. We're joined tonight by Kristen Paca, former nominal Christian. And she works with Project Rachel, coordinator in the Diocese of Toledo. And you can check out more information about that at hopeafterabortion.com. As that indicates, you know, we've got some difficult territory to cover today, some deep stuff, but always in the reflection of that, in the rebound of that, God's mercy and love and the glory of God's name. So glad to have you here today,
thank
Kristen.
You.
Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you so much, John Mark. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So, well, let's go back. Where does your spiritual journey begin?
Sure. So I grew up overseas. I was born overseas and my dad worked for the State Department. And so we lived overseas. We moved every couple of years. But the first country I could remember living in was Kuwait. And it was really my first experience with religion. My father had been dragged to church by his family once a week, you know, and the church he went to was a Church of God, I believe. I'm not entirely sure, but it was one of those experiences where you would sit in the pew for hours and then the kids would be sent away to Sunday school and then they would all come back. And by the time church was over, it was well after lunch.
Yeah.
And it was, to him, it was a drag.
Right.
And so that's where he was coming from, the broken place he was coming from when he was telling me about God. And my mother, their family went to church maybe on Christmas, maybe Easter, because their friends went. And so there wasn't really any sort of specific church they belonged to or faith they belonged to. And so they understood that faith meant being a good person. And so that's what they tried to instill in me, that, you know, to know God is to be kind to people, to be understanding of people. But there was the caveat where, you know, if you didn't do these things, God was going to be angry with you. And, you know, there was a lot of rapture talk. So there was a lot of, you know, God can be very angry and he can punish if you don't follow the rules. And so I wanted to believe and love this God, but I was also very fearful of him. And it went very closely along with my father, my earthly father. There was a lot of fear and there was a lot of, if you don't follow the rules, you know, scary things will happen. And so, you know, when we lived in Kuwait, there was this faith that really led everyone who was there. And I didn't understand their faith. I didn't understand what they were doing when they were, there was the call to prayer every few hours throughout the day. I didn't understand why the women wore the long robes and covered everything but their face and the men wore long robes. I didn't get it, but I saw that there was devotion to a faith. And that was very beautiful to me. And while there was that side, there was also fear as well, because we were Americans and we weren't really liked too much where we were. And so, you know, my mom wasn't allowed to drive. My dad worked for the embassy there, which meant that people didn't really like him very much. And so we had rocks thrown at our car and we had a go bag by our front door in case we had to evacuate. And so that was my first sort of introduction to that whole world.
Wow.
It was intense. Yeah. And so we lived there for a few years. And after that, we moved to Turkey, which was a huge culture shock because it was a very westernized culture. There were still calls to prayer. There were still, you know, that sort of thing that I had been used to. But women were wearing shorts. And there were movies and there was music and there were things that just weren't, it wasn't what I was used to, especially when I thought of faith, because that's, you know, what I had thought of. And so the commonality, though, and something that still follows me to this day is that, you know, when the call to prayer would happen, shop owners would close their doors. Restaurant owners would, you know, close their doors and they would come out to the street and they would pray. And it wasn't convenient.
Right.
It wasn't, you know, they were losing money. They weren't able to sell what they were selling. They weren't able to continue their business. And for a lot of them, that was a family business. But this was the time to pray and to show their devotion and their reverence. And something about that is so beautiful to me.
Right.
And it guides my faith now, that it's not popular to have faith and to show your faith most of the time. But what's important? And you know, what's your order of importance in your life? So still not knowing God, still not knowing really what faith was, and not having too many friends who were Christian. It was a little bit difficult to know what faith was, but we were going places like Ephesus and seeing the house where Mother Mary and St. John were. And we were going to all of these places where, you know, you'd park your car by the side of the road and look down and see a mosaic of Jesus. And it was just there. I mean, it wasn't like there was no sign, there wasn't anything, it was just there. And seeing the Hagia Sophia and how much it was fought for and how their faith was fought for and covered up and recovered. And I was realizing that, you know, people loved God so much that they were giving their lives for him. That he must not be the scary person that I thought maybe he was. And even though my parents didn't really have any sort of feeling toward anything in Ephesus or any of these mosaics, it was a historical, you know, cool thing to go see. Yeah. These people and these stories became real to me, and it was something that I held on to. And eventually I had a friend who was Catholic. She lived in our building, and they invited me to an Easter service at their church. And we had been to services before, Christian services in Turkey, and it was kind of a, yeah, you'll go to church for a little bit, but then there's this party after, and that's why you're really going. And so I thought that's what was going to happen. And so, you know, we got dressed up, and I went with her family, and we went to this unbelievable, huge cathedral. And in other countries and in other places, they really do the relics big, you know? I mean, there's like entire fingers in the corner and, you know, very, for someone who doesn't understand Catholicism or any of that, it was a little intimidating, but it was, I understood that it was beautiful and in a place where I should have felt small and not wanted, I felt loved and, like it was a sigh of relief to be there.
Yeah.
It was a Latin mass. So what was not in Latin was in Turkish. So I didn't understand anything that was going on. But I understood that God was there.
Yeah. It's amazing the distinction sometimes between what we hear told to us about the faith and then what shows up in the examples,
right?
The actual, what's lived out, what the works, the coming to prayer, the beauty of that cathedral, those often plant seeds that are far deeper than the words.
Right. And all of a sudden I was hearing about these places I'd been, you know, and hearing the names of the people who had been there. And I was still young and I still didn't understand, but it was kind of, things were coming together a little bit more. So shortly after that, my parents divorced, and my mom and I moved back to the United States, and where we lived with my grandmother and my grandfather. And I wanted that feeling of love and belonging. And so my mom knew that it was important to me, so we went church shopping. And we went to every church, you know, we were in Tennessee, so we were in the Bible Belt. There were a lot of churches. So we went to pretty much every church there was there, and I just didn't find it. And I thought maybe it was just in that one place in Turkey, and I'll never feel that way again. And then we found the Catholic Church, and as soon as I walked in, it was that sigh of relief and that feeling of belonging.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And so I couldn't drive. I was too young to drive, so my mom would drop me off, and I would sit in the back for Mass, and then she would pick me up, and we did this for a few years. And then when I went off to college, I would do the same, sitting in the back, listening to Mass. Anywhere we moved, I would find a church.
What was your sense of who Jesus was? I mean, you sort of had, a sense of God, but maybe you began to question that a little bit of a different picture of who God was. Who was Jesus in the picture of what faith was?
He was a character. Mm. He was, because when you're in those places, you know, Ephesus, for instance, or, you know, you see pictures of him, but he's not talked about a whole lot. And so I knew that, for instance, at the Hagia Sophia, he had a huge, there was a huge image of him that had been covered up, and then they put him back together, and then they covered him back up again. And so I didn't quite understand where the two went together, where God and Jesus were, you know, where they stood. But I knew that he was an important character in the whole story. Mm-hmm. So eventually, you know, I continue going to these masses and sitting in the back and being pretty comfortable in the back. I didn't know what was going on, but I didn't know how to know more. And so I lived in Arizona. Eventually, we moved to Arizona and I met my husband, or my then boyfriend. And I said, hey, you know, I do this sometimes. I go to mass and I sit in the back. Would you like to come with me? And thankfully, I think he found it endearing. I'm not sure, but but he came with me, and it became our tradition then to sit in the back and to watch Mass and to kind of try to put pieces together and understand. But neither one of us were really coming from a place of faith, so it was very surface level. Mm. So eventually, we got married. my husband and I got married, and we had our first son. And stepping back a little bit, when we moved back to the States to live with my grandmother, she had been a nurse forever. She had worked for Planned Parenthood. They had a very small, very close-knit family who talked about things very openly. And one of those things that they talked about very openly was abortion, and how important abortion was, how necessary it was, and how angry they were that people were trying to stop abortion from being available. And so that's where I grew up. That was what I heard growing up. And so as a teenager and as a young adult, that's what I adopted as my viewpoint. You know, I would say things like my body, my choice, don't like abortion, don't have one. I could spout off pretty much anything because I thought I knew everything. And I never thought it would affect me. But after we had our first son, we moved back to Tennessee to be near family. And when he was 3 months old, I found out that I was pregnant again. And immediately, all of the reasons we couldn't have another baby came to mind. We had just moved. We were still living with my mom at the time. We hadn't found a place to live. My husband had just changed jobs. I wasn't working. We didn't have money, yada, yada, yada. All the reasons why. And so instead of it being an exciting, joyful time, all we could think of was how do we fix this problem? Right. And immediately, everything I'd heard from my family came to mind, that this was what abortion was for, to have in your back pocket in case something happened, that it was safe, that it was a medical, it was a safe medical procedure that was legal, so why not? And so I called around to all of the abortion facilities in the area. There were three, and only one of them could promise me that there wouldn't be protesters in the parking lot. And that was very appealing to me because I didn't want anybody to tell me I was doing anything wrong. I didn't want to hear about God because at that point, I knew I was breaking the rules and I knew he would be mad at me.
How did you know that? Where did that come from?
This feeling of, I had a feeling that this wasn't right. It wasn't something that I wanted to do. But I knew that in my mind, there was no other way. And so I was willing to take God being mad at me, whatever that meant, in order to fix my problem. So I went to the abortion facility. And they validated all of my fears. They said, of course you can't have another baby right now. You just had a baby. You don't have the money. You don't have the support. You don't have all of these things. And I truly began to believe them. That's what I felt like I needed to hear at that moment. They told me that, you know, my husband would be mad at me if I chose not to do this, that he dropped me off. He wasn't allowed to come in, but that he dropped me off. And so obviously this is what he wanted to. And what would it do to our marriage if I chose not to have the abortion? And so, you know, you are told that enough and you're put by yourself in waiting rooms. You know, every step that you took in this building, you were alone. So, you know, the first time when you're waiting for the person to come get you to counsel you, you're sitting by yourself in a waiting room. And the way they set up clinics like this, it's very much on purpose. They don't have pictures of children or pictures of families. They don't have magazines. They don't have things to show you that there is a possibility of life without this. And so you're just alone with your thoughts and your fear. And, you know, you're counseled, you're told that you're doing the right thing. Then you go to the next room and you watch a video about what's going to happen by yourself. And, you know, you go through each step. And by the time you get to the ultrasound, the ultrasound tech forgot to turn the screen around. And so I saw what she was seeing. But I was so afraid and I was so convinced that what this was going to happen was right and okay, that seeing my child on a screen didn't change my mind. It didn't even cross my mind that this wasn't okay.
Yeah.
So we get to the point of the abortion and you know, I'm still being told that we're so glad you're here. This is going to fix all of your problems. This is going to make everything better. You're going to get to go home after and be a mom and be a wife, and you don't even have to think about this anymore. This will be all done. It'll be safe. It'll be fast, easy, no big deal. And the abortion begins, and immediately it's not safe. It's not easy. It's not fast. There are complications. It takes a very long time. And I hear things and see things that no one should ever have to hear or see. And at the end, you're put into a recovery room. And this is the one time you're not alone. And you're surrounded by a bunch of women who have been drugged. Basically, you're in this place, in this stage where you're just so out of it. You're so drained. You're so just not yourself. And that's where they have you sit until they walk you out to your car and you go home. And I immediately realized that what I had done, I wanted to undo. That I had been wrong my whole life. That this wasn't okay. And that I was missing someone. That, you know, I had done something that made God very angry. And that it wasn't just, you know, oh, this is just a little mistake. This was a big deal. And I didn't know what to do with that feeling. And so I went back in the car. My husband picked me up with our then 6-month-old in the back seat. We went home and I was mom. We didn't talk about it. Nobody knew. And I just went back into my role as mom and wife and everything was fine because it had to be. And that lasted for years.
Wow.
Yeah. At a certain point, you don't talk about it because you don't think people will understand.
Right.
And so I didn't share with Tyler, my husband, because I didn't think he would get it. He wasn't there, right? And still, I had that voice in my head saying, he dropped you off. He thought it was okay. If you talk about this, it's only going to make him feel worse. And what will that do? You know, and so I didn't share with him, but I still got that anger. Even though I was trying to do an okay thing, I was trying to keep him from it, I was still angry with him. And he was angry with me because, for one thing, I wasn't talking to him. But he was dealing with his own grief and his own, you know, experience. And come to find out later, they called him while I was at the facility and said, she's farther along than we thought. And it's going to cost you more money. And he said, okay, just do it. And that was his chance to say no. That was his, you know, maybe it was God, maybe, I don't know. That was his chance to say, you know what, never mind, I'm going to come pick her up. And he didn't do it. And so we fought a lot. We argued all the time. at least once a week, one of us left the house and didn't know if they were coming back. We were just angry and we didn't know why. We wanted somebody to blame, and so we were blaming each other. And, you know, he didn't want to be home and be around me, so he was at work all the time, and I didn't really want to be home, and I didn't know what it looked like to be a mom after that, because look at what I had just done, you know? I couldn't be a mom. And so we weren't the people we needed to be for each other, for our son. But we were kind of playing along with, okay, well, I guess this is our normal now. And if this is our normal, we have to make it work, and here we go. We don't have to like each other. We just have to do this. And so eventually we had another son, and realized that he wasn't going to solve our problems. And so when the opportunity to move for work came up, Tyler said, you know, there's a position in Toledo, Ohio. Do you think we should move? And we had never been to Toledo before. We didn't know anything about Toledo. But we thought, you know, this magic world of Toledo will be where none of our problems follow us. And so we decided to move, and they followed us. So things were worse, if possible, in Toledo, because we truly didn't have anybody. We didn't have family. We didn't have friends. This feeling of being alone, we thought we were alone in Tennessee, but we weren't. We had people. And here in Ohio, we didn't have anybody. And we hadn't sat in the back of Mass in a very long time. We hadn't talked about God at all since any of this happened. And so one day we thought, we'll just go for a walk and kind of explore where we moved. And we turned a corner and immediately saw the Catholic Church downtown. And it was this beautiful building. And I thought, well, if nothing else, I just want to go in and look at it. It's beautiful, you know. And I walk in, and in the narthex of the church is this huge sign for RCIA. And it says something like, you know, do you have questions about the Catholic Church, right, or find out more or something? And I thought, this initially, I think I just thought, this will get me out of the house. This will give me something to do. But I remembered that feeling of belonging and that feeling of love. And I knew that I needed it, even if I didn't deserve it. And so I did want to know more about the Catholic Church, and I did want to find out more about this faith that I didn't know much about.
Wonderful. We're going to take a break here in a moment, but just, and we'll talk about it more after the break and later on in the program, but it's interesting the different ways that the devil gets in, mm-hmm, and gives us a ready-made interpretation of the world, of who God is, of how we're to regard our choices before they occur, mm-hmm, of how we're to think about ourselves after they occur.
Right.
And it's not until we become aware of those voices that we see all along the little ways, yeah, that he was in there kind of telling us our story.
Right. Right.
Wrongly, falsely.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Because on one hand, you know, abortion should be great. You know, you should be able to do this without any repercussions. Mm-hmm. But then as soon as you have an abortion, well, you're going to hell.
Right. Yeah, you're too far gone.
Right. There's no help for you.
Yeah. Terrible lies. Terrible lies.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a quick break there.
Sure.
And we'll come back and hear what happens after you check out that RCA program.
Sounds
there
good.
In Toledo, Ohio. Thanks again for being here. We'll be back in just a couple minutes to hear the rest of Kirsten's story. I want to remind you that if you go to chnetwork.org, you can find hundreds of stories, many like Kirsten's, but also stories from people coming from every imaginable background and denomination, history, who all have one thing in common. They came to know the love of Jesus Christ in the Catholic Church. And so if you check out chnetwork.org, you'll find their stories as well as other resources and community. We'd love to help you and pray for you as you explore the Catholic Church as well. So check that out. Again, we'll be back in just a couple minutes to hear the rest of Kirsten's story. See you then. Well, welcome back. Tonight we're speaking to Kirsten Paca. We've just been hearing her really powerful testimony in the first half of the program, and we're back to hear the rest of it. She's a former nominal Christian, and she works with Project Rachel as a coordinator in Diocese of Toledo. And also, if you go to the website hopeafterabortion.com, you can learn more about her work and also to find great help and resources if you are dealing with post-abortive trauma and just, you know, the healing and the wounds of all that. Kirsten, we were just chatting a bit during the break about, again, the lies the devil tells us, but also just the ways, you know, your story, it's very shocking, the ways that, again, whether it's purely of human or diabolical origin, that all throughout the process, even the ways that that you described the abortion facility, you know, the ways that we're led in, this is not a big deal, we're isolated, we're separated from people in our sin, and this is sort of a model for all sin, and then afterwards, then we're further isolated from mercy. It really is diabolical, right?
Right, right. It's very much that, you know, if you're by yourself, in a very physical way, you know, your husband, your boyfriend, your friend is not allowed to come. They're not allowed to come in with you. What other medical office or medical facility is like that? You know, if you ask for a support person, in most cases, you're able to bring someone with you. And you know, every step of the way, you're in it and you're seeing it. But there's this sort of like, oh, well, they have my best interest at heart. You know, they're doing this because it's best for me. And, you know, maybe they're not allowed to come in because there's not enough space. Okay. Maybe they're not allowed to come in because, you know, there's not a waiting room for them for later. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You justify it,
yeah.
You know, and they count on it. And I think that another very important part to all of this, and a reason why I'm very grateful that I did grow up the way I did, was that my grandmother, who worked for Planned Parenthood, was not out to hurt anyone.
Absolutely.
My mother, who told me that abortion was okay and that it was something to have in my back pocket in case I needed it, wasn't out to hurt me. And that can be said for the vast majority of people who believe that abortion is okay. There are people who, you know, who are performing abortions who truly do view that as helpful, as mercy. And seeing those people, I think that now sometimes within the pro-life movement, we can see that and we can just feel anger. And we can feel, it's easy to feel hatred toward people who are choosing to do this because we feel so adamantly that it is wrong and we know that it's wrong. But we need to be able to see that as no one's intrinsically evil. They're trying to help. And when you see people through that lens, and when you see this whole thing through that lens, you're able to open that dialogue. And that's what's important. It's not us versus them. It's not I'm right, you're wrong, and let me tell you all the reasons why you're wrong. We have to be able to have an open dialogue and to show the love of God to everyone. Anyway, that's kind
absolutely. That's one of the important parts of the stories too, is that as you walk through it, again, we can see that. We can see that the reason that your grandmother and your mother believed the things they did, and how, again, we're tricked by the evil one, by the deceiver, into false compassion, into ways of trying to pursue the good and pursue happiness that won't make us happy.
Right.
And keep us away from God, who's the only one who will lead us to that. So,
right.
But we'll get back to the narrative. Okay, you just encountered this invitation to RCIA.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So you know, I told my husband that this was what I wanted to do, and he reluctantly was kind of like, okay, go for it. He had no interest, so I went ahead, and that next month I began taking classes. And I met these beautiful people who I realized were also broken. And now, in this group of people, I felt like the black sheep. I was by far, you know, the most broken, and I didn't deserve to be there. And I truly did feel like once they found out what I had done, I wouldn't be allowed to come back. Because I knew the Catholics didn't like abortion. And that's kind of as far as it went. The Tennessee, the Bible Belt version of, you know, abortion isn't right. If you do this, you're going to hell. there's no saving you, kind of like we mentioned before. And so, so I was sitting in these classes and I was learning about this beautiful faith, and I was being introduced to these, you know, these people in the Bible, in our faith, who to me had just been characters growing up, you know, Mary. I didn't understand Mary. She was a character to me. She was someone who'd lived a long time ago. She had been in this house I went to, something important happened there. I wasn't sure. And so I was learning the full story, and I was able to look back and see how all the puzzle pieces were coming together. Not necessarily in the grand scheme of Christianity, of Catholicism, in Kirsten's story. This is why I was here. This is why I saw this. This is why I met this person. And while it was very exciting and it was something that I loved hearing about and I thought about all the time, there was that little voice in my head that said, they're going to kick you out. Enjoy this while you can, because you're not allowed to be here. And so I never really wanted to be all in, because why be all in if you're not going to get to be all in at the end? And I remember toward the end of our CIA, we kind of had to have a recap with the director and, you know, let her know if you had planned to become Catholic, and because there were some things that needed to happen. And I said, you know, I can't really tell you why, but I feel like I'm not going to be allowed to continue. And she said, well, why don't you meet with the priest? And so I sat down with the priest, because, you know, otherwise we would have to go to confession and, you know, continue. And I thought, oh, I'm not going to go to confession. That's where I'm going to draw the line. And I thought, okay, I'll sit down with him outside of the confessional and I'll talk about this. And so I said, I had an abortion, and I know that Catholics don't like that. I know that I did something very bad. And I said, I know I don't deserve God's love, and I don't deserve his forgiveness, and I don't deserve to be here. And I said, you know I'm going to hell because I did this thing, but I just wanted to let you know, because I've really liked our CIA and I really liked learning about this. But I wanted to let you know, because I don't have to keep coming back. I can't be Catholic. And he looked at me and he said, you're loved. And you're right where you need to be. And he told me that none of us deserve what we're given by God. And that's what makes it such a gift. And that's why we live in gratitude. And he told me about Project Rachel. And that was a huge gift, because I was able to find that I wasn't alone. That there was a whole community of people who, you know, we're all different ages, but we all had the commonality of abortion. All of our situations were different. All of our, you know, everything was so different. But I could go to this meeting and I could sit in front of these women and I could say, for the past 4 years, I've woken up and I've relived my abortion from the moment I wake up until the moment I go to bed. You know, I've had depression and anxiety. I've had an eating disorder. I've tried to kill myself multiple times. I'm not the mom I want to be, and I'm not the wife I want to be, and I feel like I'm drowning. And I could say that, and they could say, yeah, I've been there. Yeah, I know. You're not alone. Yeah. And again, God loves you. And this constant reiteration of God loves you, he wants you. That little voice in your head, that's not God. That, okay, so this is where you are. Let's get you on a path so that you can know God, so that you can understand what mercy is. You can understand what forgiveness is. And it changed my life. It changed my family. It's the feeling that you know that mercy. You know, that you can physically tell where your life ended in one respect and it completely started again.
Yeah.
It's powerful. And it's something that I truly do live my life in gratitude for every day, because without him, there's no way I could be doing this right now. I am not that kind of person. I couldn't do any of what I'm doing now without him and without the steps that he put me on. I mean, without any of this story, there's no way that I could be here. And it's mind-boggling sometimes. It's I don't understand it, but all I can be is grateful.
That's wonderful.
And now I get to be the person who talks to women who reach out and say that God loves you, that there is someone who loves you more than you ever could understand.
Yeah.
And he wants you. It's the leaving the 99 to find the one.
Mm-hmm.
We're all the one.
Yeah.
And when you're able to see that and you're able to truly believe it, it's life-changing.
It's again, I brought up earlier, you know, the topic here of spiritual warfare of the devil, how he speaks to us, right? One of the subtle ways is simply putting truths out of their proper order.
Right.
Right? That what's biggest and first and foremost is my sin.
Right.
And only secondarily is God's love.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe conditionally. And maybe I've messed it up too much. Rather than,
right.
You know, the good father right there, you know, speaking to the truth that the first and primary thing is God's love.
Right.
Everything else is in context of that.
Right. 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 And it, you know, it goes back to when the call to prayer comes, they close their doors and they walk out into the middle of the street to pray.
Mm.
Those people could be hurting quite a bit. Mm. Not everyone's perfect. There are a whole bunch of sinners praying right then. There are a whole bunch of people with real problems going on. But right at that moment, what's most important? You know, and I think that that's where that comes in for me is that, you know, yes, I think it's very easy even now for me to say, well, I did this thing. You know, just because healing happens doesn't mean that the sin goes away. You know, I still did this thing. If we're not careful, that can be brought up in a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
It can be turned around on us in a lot of different ways. And so maintaining that order, who comes first, what comes first, you know, even when you feel like you don't feel God with you right then, even when things are hard, it doesn't mean that God's gone.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that mercy's gone.
Yeah, so that's why the scripture and the church are so important, because you have to have a sure place to get the story straight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as we sift through our own story and the stories that are told to us and the voices, you know, around
right.
us and in our heads, you know, that, but what's the real story?
Right.
And we have a place to go to say, okay, what's the real story about who God is mm-hmm. and who I am, even in my brokenness?
Right. Right.
Yeah. Let's see. So you make this connection with Project Rachel. Your family entered the church.
Yes.
Correct? Talk
yes.
about a little bit about that.
So that year in 2015, I became Catholic.
Yeah.
2 years later, my husband, Tyler, went through RCIA and awesome. He became Catholic. And we had our marriage convalidated. And that was such a turning point for us. Even as I was going through RCIA and all of these things in my life were changing, our marriage was still very difficult. You know, I was seeing all of these things and finding out these truths, and Tyler wasn't there yet. And he didn't quite know that he wanted to be there. And so there was still a lot of communicating like this. and it took a lot of time and a lot of him feeling like he wasn't pressured. To decide to do this. And when we convalidated our marriage, it was another one of those times where you could see the end of one, you know, life and the beginning of another. There was so much grace that was poured out upon us. And finally God was in the place he needed to be in our lives, in our marriage, in our family. And we saw the fruit of that. Immediately, we saw that, you know, yes, we were trying to do this all on our own. We thought that we could fix our problems. That's how this all started. We thought we had it covered, and we continued to feel like we had it covered, even though we were failing and even though we were drowning. And it took us saying, you know what? No, this isn't us. We can't do this. We need help. We need God to truly be able to turn things around and to make things what they needed to be. Now, of course, we're not perfect. We still, you know, things aren't perfect, but but they're so good. And we're grateful. We're just, it's so good. He came into the church in 2017, and we just kind of hit the ground running, I guess. Now we do a lot in the church, and we just, you know, it's a beautiful thing to see. It's a beautiful thing for me to see his life and how it has been affected and changed by all of this.
Yeah. Yeah, and I didn't know Tyler before. I do know Tyler now, good buddy of mine, and he's just a man of real joy. Yes. And so hearing the story, it's impactful to me because it's like, you know, I can see where you are now. Beautiful family, beautiful marriage. Okay, well, this is good. Let's circle back around to a few things. I mean, one that I wanted to bring up was, because you brought it up a little bit after the break, is, you know, our response to all this, you know, and how... we as a church, as a pro-life movement, need to regard not both the women who've had these experiences, but even those involved in the system, in the machine. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah. So we all do things that we think are right, and they aren't always right. But I know that we all have moments where we think, oh, this is going to be helpful to so-and-so, or this is going to make things better for this group of people. And in fact, it does the opposite. And I truly do believe that, you know, like I was saying before, we need to have an open dialogue.
Yeah.
With very few expectations, because there is a lot of anger from both sides. There are, you know, I'm just thinking about a couple of instances where when you go through an abortion, there's a time usually in that process after where you have to justify your decision because it's the only way that you can get through. You have to say that you're okay. You have to say that it's the right thing, that of course it's fine, because if it's not fine, if it's truly what it is, what does that make you? And we can't bear that. We can't handle that. And so I think so often we see these women who are, you know, holding up signs and saying things and maybe not being who, I don't know. We just see these images of people and we think, oh, they must be awful people. They must be rude. They must be hateful. They must be, you know, they must hate us and they must... And it has nothing to do with us. Pain takes a lot of different forms.
Right.
And pain and evil take a lot of different forms. And when evil has its grasp, very crazy things happen. You know, very, it's, when you see it from that lens, you can see it. It's, it's definitely apparent. But I think that when we come at it with an emotional, from an emotional standpoint, things get muddied and things get blurred and we can be quite hurtful.
Right.
But I think if we step back and we really think about what our job is to love as God loved. All of these people are made in the image and likeness of God, whether we agree with them, whether we like what they're doing or not. And my job isn't to judge. It's not to say, oh, wow, what you're doing is, that's not what, you know, I don't agree with that. I may not agree with that, but it doesn't mean that I treat you any differently. And that's how we truly bring about that love and that that godliness to people. Sometimes it's not even the words that we say. Mm. You know, most of the time it's not in the words that we say. It's how we live our lives. It's how we are in our daily lives, out in public. It's how we act when we are at the abortion facility in Toledo. It's how we portray that love that God has for us and that love that has changed us.
Yeah.
We are now responsible for sharing with other people.
Yeah, this is, so much comes down to our image of who God is and our I mean, this is what good theology trickles down to, right? Our beliefs and our practices and our you know, who God is, what sin is, right? I was thinking as you're talking, like, you know, we have heard the familiar maxim, love the sinner, hate the sin.
Right.
I think that can be a little dangerous because we have to recognize that we hate the sin because we love the sinner.
Right.
It's not, we tolerate the sinner, you know, because we really hate the sin.
Right.
But it's the person. That's the reason sin is so destructive, because it hurts people. It hurts the person doing it.
Right.
And so we have to get our image of who God is, right, and our image of what sin is correct as well.
Right. Yeah. And we also have to understand that, you know, people respond differently to all of this. You know, we talk about Tyler and how his journey was. We began this ministry in the Diocese of Toledo called the Joseph Ministry. Mm-hmm. And Tyler now coordinates and runs that. And it's for men who've had experience with abortion. Project Rachel works with men. Project Rachel works with anyone in your family, but men aren't going to call me. And I'm okay with that. I understand. And so who better to speak with a man than someone, a man who's been through it? And, you know, we talk about how, well, obviously men and women are different. We all handle things differently, but it's very different. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of anger. There's a lot that goes into a man's perspective of all of this. And so I think that, you know, also when we're talking to someone who may be pro-abortion, you know, we have to factor in, you never know who you're talking to. Mm-hmm. You never know their experience. You're not going to know that. And so if you start up a conversation with your, you know, guns a-blazing, just trying to convince them that you're right and that this is wrong, and you're not going to make any leeway. In fact, you'll probably be met with a lot of anger because, again, everyone handles this differently.
You know, the thing I wanted to bring up, I think is always important in this kind of discussion, is that, you know, again, one of the lies, one of the things that goes on here, right, is that we hear or we have an impression of God and the church and the faith, and it comes to us wrongly as merely the thou shalt not. Mm-hmm. And so the whole debate, the internal debate, is between God says I shouldn't, and other voices or my own desires are saying I should. What's left out of there, even in that microcosm, is that, well, but even the thou shalt not, that's not the content of the faith. That's just the veneer on something that's the negative that's in front of the positive. So we're talking about sexuality or marriage or kids or what. It's not the what not to do. It's because it's protecting a great positive good. Talk about the other side of all that, you know, the great, God's great plan for marriage and family.
Right.
As you've encountered it, yeah.
Right, and I think that, you know, so many times people look at the Catholic faith and they think, oh, it's a bunch of rules.
Yeah.
You know, what a drag. You know, why would we do that?
Yeah.
And someone explained it to me one time that it's just like having, when you're bowling, having bumpers or bumper guards up on the sides. You know, sure, you can't do these things, but you have all of this room.
Yeah.
And what a freeing feeling to know that you have all of this room to live this beautiful life that's in line with the church, that's in line with what God wants for you.
Yeah.
And there are resources within the Catholic Church. We're not just going to list all of these things you can't do and say, well, you're on your own. You know, I mean, there are people who know way more than we do. Mm-hmm. There are, you know, these books and these places you can go to learn more.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, within your marriage, When you learn what that looks like, when you have examples of what that looks like to live within those bumpers, that's what you want. And that's what you're striving for without knowing it.
Yeah.
You know, before we were Catholic and before the abortion and before all of it, you know, we knew getting married that we wanted this marriage that was this beautiful marriage and that, you know, we were happy and we didn't know how to get that.
Yeah.
It was sort of this far off, sure, that would be great, wouldn't it? But it's in the movies. It's not real. And now seeing that, you know, the church has set up for us these ways in which to live and these choices to make and these examples where this is true beauty. Mm-hmm. This is truly living out our faith. And it's not always perfect. It's not always easy. But it's always worth it.
Yeah.
And it's fruitful and it's truly in line with how things should be.
Yeah. We were created for happiness, for glory, for connection, for love. Mm-hmm. And the church is this great gift from God to give us the way to right. that. And as you said, there's variety in there. As we look at the right. lives of the saints, none of the saints are cookie cutters right. of each other. I mean, they are all different.
Right, right.
But their particular path in following Christ led right. them to holiness and happiness.
Right. And I think not only happiness, and I think this was a huge part in our journey and in our marriage, there is a difference between happiness and joy.
Yes.
And happiness is great, but it's short-lived.
Yeah.
And happiness can also sometimes get you in trouble. what you want is joy. Mm. And once you find it, you know it.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. All right. Well, we just got a few minutes left. And so again, we shared great testimony, talked through some of this stuff, but if there's somebody out in the audience, again, who's been through some of this and maybe heard some of those lies, felt some of those feelings, give them a word.
Sure, sure. Yeah. I will say what I was told. God loves you. He wants you. There is no sin too great for God. And you are not too far gone. You are loved more than you could ever imagine. And it's necessary that you're here. That there are people who want to help you. And I know that it's hard to make that phone call. That's the hardest part, is making the phone call. But there are people who have devoted their lives to helping people like us who want to help you find God.
Yeah. And what's that website again? What will people find there if they
go visit?
Sure. So
it's hopeafterabortion.com. Okay. So Project Rachel, the ministry, is nationwide. And so there are some more general topics covered, you know, how to speak to someone who's had an abortion if you yourself haven't. And then also there's a map under the Find Help tab where you can search for your own location. If you click on your state, there's a whole list of Project Rachel coordinators with their email and phone number. And I know for me specifically, if you email me, that's just as good as calling. So I know sometimes the phone call is hard. And so feel free to reach out to any of us and we're more than happy to help.
All right. And what was the project that your husband is involved with as well?
The Joseph Ministry. So the Joseph Ministry is within the Diocese of Toledo. Okay. If you search the Joseph Ministry, Diocese of Toledo, it'll come up and he's happy to answer any.
Awesome.
Any calls
to wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Kirsten, for joining us.
Thank you.
And sharing
thank
your
you
story
having
today.
Me.
Again, it's always a tough to relive and retell some of that difficult stuff. But our great God brings good out of the darkness. And
that's right.
Thank you for courageously sharing it.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Journey Home program. I want to remind you, as always, that if you visit chnetwork.org, we've got a lot there for you. In particular, there are actually a couple of videos that we were able to film with Kirsten, you know, so there's more from her there. But there's a variety of stories and resources if you are exploring the Catholic Church, if you're looking for truth, if you're looking for, also, again, community. Kirsten, I think a big part of your story is precisely this point that in our brokenness and our sinfulness, the devil tries to separate us, divide us, isolate us, right, from God and from other people. And so we know that God is love and that we need to reach out and reconnect. And so again, at chnetwork.org, we'd love to walk with you on your journey of exploring the Catholic faith. We'd love to be praying for you and helping you out. So check that out. There's a community there, newsletter resources as well. So once again, thank you for joining us for this episode of the Journey Home program. God bless you. We'll talk to you again next week.